Okay, so the topic we were asked to deal with today is the recent Alabama Supreme Court ruling. A lot of people have been talking about it. It's in the news quite a bit, and it was quite a ruling. The ruling was as follows. Basically what happened was that somehow in a fertility clinic, there were some frozen, fertilized embryos that were in the clinic, and somehow they were being moved. Someone handled them and dropped them, and obviously they were then taken out of the cryopreserver, out of their freezer, and they were destroyed. And the parents, the potential parents of these embryos, brought a wrongful death lawsuit against the fertility clinic. It's one thing to say that that they're liable somehow for having lost these embryos, but wrongful death was equating them, giving them the status of a human. And so that was seen as quite a claim. But the Supreme Court of Alabama ruled in their favor and ruled that a wrongful death lawsuit can be brought for an embryo. And they actually, in their ruling, compared the fertility clinic to a daycare center. They said they had the same responsibilities as a daycare center, as if those frozen embryos are children under their watch. And just like if they were, a child would be killed in their daycare center, they have the same responsibilities to the frozen embryo as the as a child. And so their claim in that ruling was that wrongful death applies equally to the born and the unborn. And they wrote in that ruling, they frequently referenced the divine commandments, and they said that embryos have the image of God, and that embryo is a full life and deserves the protections of a minor. So, and as you can imagine, what happened immediately after that is that even though ironically this was intended to defend or support in some ways the parents who lost these potential children in this clinic. Immediately, IVF clinics throughout the state of Alabama shut down because they couldn't deal with the incredible responsibility and that they now have, that if they will lose an embryo or in some cases intentionally discard them, which is something that happens sometimes, as we'll discuss in fertility treatment, that they could now be liable for having killed somebody. And not only that, but for the people who were, who had embryos there that were waiting to hopefully soon have them implanted into a mother so that they could be impregnated and gestated and born, many of them said, these are going to be our children. We want to be able to send them out of Alabama at least. And the companies that transfer these embryos all shut down as well. They weren't willing to even transfer them out of the state because of the liability that something might happen in transit from Alabama to another state. And so all these people now who had frozen embryos there are unable to move forward. And so IVF treatment completely shut down in Alabama as a result of this extreme ruling that was intended to prohibit tended to treat the unborn at the status of life. So that was the ramifications of the ruling, and that's the ruling. And so the question is, what does Judaism say? What does the Torah say about this? And the truth is, interestingly, or maybe hopefully not surprisingly, the Torah does have sources on this. And so we're going to go through that. Let me show you. We'll start, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. But let's first look through some of the sources as the way I think that the simplest way to organize them. I haven't seen yet. I'm sure people are, there will be articles and op-eds and people will be talking about this. I so far have not seen rabbis talking about it, probably because it happened in Alabama. I don't think there's such a big Jewish community there, and I don't think many Jews have been crying out to their rabbis yet. What do we do? But of course, as this is seen in many ways as one of the ramifications of the ending of Roe versus Wade, it's very possible that many red states, this could happen in other states. And so let's say it happens in Florida or something like that. So obviously then the Jewish community will be very impacted. So what does the Torah say? What sources do we have? First of all, what's the status of a fetus? When does a fetus become a human? So the classic source, the place to look on that, is the Mishnah in Olos. The Mishnah says as follows: Ha'isha shi maksha leled, a woman who is suffering in labor, Mechatrin et avlad b'mayeha. We can actually, the Torah allows what we call like DNC today. You can cut up the vlad. You can cut up the fetus in order to save the mother's life because she's, you know, her life is at risk. Presumably in this difficult labor that she's in, you can cut up the fetus and take it out. Umatzinoto evarim evarim. You take it out limb by limb. You take out the legs and the body, etc. Why? Mipnei shechayeha kodmim lechayav. Because her life, the mother's life, comes before the fetus's life. So since her life, since the mother's life comes first, and the fetus is now risking the mother, we can kill the fetus, abort the fetus to save the mother's life. Her life comes first. Yatsa rubo. But what about when the majority of the, now I'm not going to say fetus, now I'm going to say baby. Now, what about when the majority of the baby is born? Yatsa rubo, ein nogin bo. Then you don't touch it. Once the majority of the body is out, majority of the baby, so we usually call that Rosh Aruba, the head, and the majority of the body has now been born, ein dochin, then ein nogin bo, you don't touch it because ein dochin nefesh, midin nefesh. So now they have equal status. The baby now has equal status with the mother once it is has been mostly born. And Rashi there says, what's the difference? Why is that? That just because it's been partially born, that it's now equal to the mother. So Rashi says, because shelo yatzal aver olam lav nefesh hu. Before it's been born, it's not a nefesh. Nefesh doesn't really mean it has doesn't have a soul yet, even though you could read it that way. It really means it does. It's not a status of a person. It's not a person yet. And so since it doesn't have the status of a person until it's born, at least mostly born, it doesn't have that status while it is still a fetus in the womb. It's by the way, it's complicated how to define lav nefeshu, because in Ubar, Rashi elsewhere, in Yoma Pei Beis Amad Aleph, in Yoma 82a, says that an Ubara desires food. It has a desire for food. So what does it mean that it's not alive, it's not a person? Some argue that what it means is that the fetus is it does have some kind of personhood, something, but it doesn't have the status of a human yet. It doesn't have the chalos shame, the status of a living adult, a human being yet. It's a different status. It might have some status of some. It's obviously not just cells that mean nothing. A fetus is something. It has some status, but not equal status to a human being, according to the Talmud. That's the difference. Interestingly, so that's a fetus. But we're not talking about fetuses here. We're talking about embryos. We need to have a discussion about embryos, really. Someone who could simply say, okay, that answers our question now, right? We're done. This is the Jewish approach. Before it's born, it's not a nefesh, it's not a life, and therefore these judges were wrong if they were asking a Jewish opinion because an embryo is not a life. You could say that and just be done. But it's more complicated than that because there are more sources in the Torah that deal with this question. And so we need to analyze them too to have a more full and complete understanding of this issue. So really to understand this issue fully, we go to another source, which is, you would think, is totally outside of the realm of this. And in fact, there's a really interesting statement that I'll show you about why many people thought this was outside of the realm of our conversation until the modern era. So the Gemara says, really, it's a Mishnah in Yoma. Mishnah and Yoma, actually what we referred to that page earlier, Pei Beis Amad Aleph, Yoma 82a. The Mishnah says, Ubara Sheirecha, a pregnant woman who smells food and is desires to eat. She wants to eat it, right? She's very hungry. It's Yom Kippur, though. Can we feed a pregnant woman on Yom Kippur? Machilinosa ad shetashiv nafsha. Yes, we can feed. The halacha is that she can eat if she's really weak, she's really sick as a result. She can feed her to recover, because we assume that not feeding her could lead to a life-threatening situation and therefore allowed to feed her. Okay, fine. That's not talking about she's pregnant, but it's not talking about the embryo. But let's talk about the embryo, because the Rush, one of the medieval Spanish commentaries on that piece of the Gemara, quotes a fascinating debate. And there was a debate about amongst the Gaonim, the authorities from about 1,000 years ago, of whether one could violate Shabbat or Yom Kippur in order to save the life of the fetus. Now here we're talking about the mother, but what about saving the life of a fetus? This is now getting more, actually much closer to our question. The Gaonim wanted to know, can you violate Shabbos or Yom Kippur to save a fetus's life? And this will help us understand the status with which Jewish law gives the fetus. Because if it says, yes, break Shabbos, break Yom Kippur to save a fetus, then it has some sort of status. And then maybe we agree with the judges of the Supreme Court. Don't worry, not so fast. I mean, before I give the answer, give me some time to explain. But maybe we would say yes if we do violate Shabbos, then we agree with them. And it's a dispute. Some say that no, we only save the life of the mother on Shabbos and Yom Kippur. That's one opinion. Only a living human being, someone who's been born, only who's nefesh, right? However, the majority opinion is the Bahag. The Bahag, and here it's quoted here, it's quoted by the Ramban, Nachmanides. V'chas of Ramban zal, mashu mitoch divrei bal halachos, the Bahag, the one of the Gaonim, the mishum sekanas vlad, l'chudya mechalalin. His opinion was that just for the sake of the fetus, you could violate Shabbat and Yom Kippur. Just for the life of the fetus. And this is what we see here. The Ramban says this, the Rashba says this, the Ritva, a number of Rishonim said this was their opinion. By the way, it's fascinating because then the Rush says, okay, he just brings the disagreement. That's what he says. That's his opinion. You can violate Shabbos for saving a fetus. Interestingly, look at this line in the Rush. The Rush says they're debating this, right? Can you save? You can violate Shabbos for the mother, for the adult, for the human being. Can you violate it though for the fetus? And then he says, well, wait a second. Why are we even having this debate? V'lo yadati matzorach lechol ela dikdukim. Why are we even debating this? D'lo mishkachas sekanas ubar, b'lo sekanas uvara. You cannot have a situation where the fetus is in danger and the mother isn't in danger. V'lo sekanas ubara, b'lo sekanas ubar. And not a situation when the mother's in danger, but not the fetus. Meaning the mother and the fetus and the mother and the embryo are always connected. So why are we even having this debate? Which I love that he asked that question because maybe he didn't know why in the 12th century he was having that debate. But in the 21st century, the debate is very relevant. We do have a situation now where we can have an embryo separate from an adult, separate from the fetus, separate from the womb. Which was one of the things I love about Torah. Because you have these debates that did not seem relevant in their time. They were not technologically possible. You couldn't take an embryo out of a person and it survives in the 12th century in Spain or the 10th century in the Bahá'í Society, right? That wasn't a thing. So why debate this? But they said, no, it's just interesting. Let's just debate. What does the rabbis mean? Did they mean just save the mother's life? Just save the fetus's life? Only the fetus? Also the fetus? Like, it was a debate. It was just interesting. So, like, they wanted to get to the bottom of, it was, the Milchamta Shel Torah. This is the battles of Torah. We want to analyze the Torah. And today, this is now like, well, actually, thank God they analyzed this, because now we have, our great rabbis have given us guidance on this. So at first we say here, you know what? We have a ruling here. And the Ramban quotes the Bahag, the great Gaon, and many others quote him, that the fetus does have some, the embryo does have the status. We would violate Shabbos and Yom Kippur for the fetus. Why? First, let's just ask why. Why do we violate, because they're not humans. I mean, I don't know, we're not arguing that they're human. They're not, it's not, I mean, is it, unless it is, do we say the same as the daycare center? That they're a daycare center, you know, the same as the Alabama Supreme Court? So here's the reasons for it. The reasons are, number one, I have it undone here, D'yalfinan mi v'chai behem. You could, some said, the reason in general that we would be Mechal Shabbos, we would be Yom Kippur, is the verse in the Torah says, V'chai behem. You should live, the Torah, the mitzvahs in the Torah are V'chai behem, to live by them. So if it's to live by them, then that's everything. That the goal is to live by them. But when it comes to a fetus, do we say that you should violate Shabbos and Yom Kippur because it's to V'chai behem, that you should save life? Are we giving it the status of a life? So he says, V'adar v'ubarim hagam shelo shayach klal v'geder v'chai behem. No, it does not fit into v'chai behem. It does not fit into save a life. V'lo shiyamus behem de'enu adayim v'geder chai klal. It's not a chai. It's not a life. So then why did he say you have to violate Shabbos and Yom Kippur to save the fetus? Mikol makom k'de lehaviu afilu lesafek shel shmiras shabbosos harbe mitzvah lechalal alav. Because we have a different principle. There's a principle called chalel alav Shabbos achas Kadesh Yishmeru Shabbosos Harbe. Sometimes you can violate the Sabbath to save a life. Meaning, why can we practice medicine on Shabbos? Why are we allowed to break Shabbos? We know that we are allowed to violate Shabbat to save a life. Why is that? So one of the main reasons is because if you violate this Sabbath to save their life, then they can observe many more Sabbaths. They can bring more Shabbos. So it's worth it to break one Shabbos in order to allow the person to observe many more. So this, he's arguing, this is now, according to that Ramban, that opinion of the Ramban and the Bahag, why did the fetus, the embryo, I'm sorry, have that status? Why did they say you could violate Yom Kippur and Shabbos? It's because it has potential. It's potential life. That's exactly what he's saying, right? He's saying you are breaking, you can violate something now for an embryo, not because of v'chai behem, not because it's a life right now, but because it's a potential life. And that's still important. Potential life is important. And by the way, there is another halacha elsewhere in Shulchan Aruch, a fascinating law, just to show you another interesting case. Shulchan Aruch and Or HaChaim, at the end of Shin Vav, 306, that has the same principle. For a similar reason, that the principle there is Misha Shalcho Lod Shotzi Bitu Michlal Yisrael. What if someone's child was kidnapped and taken away from them, and by someone who's not, you know, by non-Jewish tribes or something, in order to try to take them away from the religion, take them away from the Jewish community? Are you allowed? And it's on Shabbos. Could you chase them down, go outside of the tchum, outside of the boundaries of Shabbat, and chase them down in order to save them on Shabbos? It's not saving their life. The person's not claiming to kill them. They just came to make them not Jewish anymore. Take them out of the community. So is that the halacha is, the Shulchan Aruch says that you can. Why? V'hainu afilu b'chilo Shabbos de'raisa, even to violate the Shabbos de'raisa, because Rabbeinu Beis Yosef, Magen Avram Sham, de'gabi shelo tamar v'tavor kol yemeha al chilo Shabbos, because that person now has been kidnapped, is going to spend their entire life unable to observe Shabbos. Harezi isura zuta, it's now a small prohibition, de mutav l'chalo Shabbos achas, k'shetishmur Shabbosos harbe. So you can violate that Shabbos in order to observe many Shabbos. So we see from that another principle that that even though it's not pekuach nefesh, you're not really saving the person's life, and they're not really in sakana in this case. The person either, I think it's a case where the person ran away. They're not even, it's not that they're kidnapped, right? They just ran away there, but you're trying to get them to come back. It's just to save them, to be able to observe Torah mitzvos again, so they won't rebel against the Torah. So just for that reason, you could violate Shabbos. And that's the same principle that we have here of the Bahag, that you can violate Shabbos and Yom Tov so that they can observe many more Shabbos. Now, let me summarize everything, because this is now where it's going to get complicated, and we're going to get more intricate now. So let me summarize everything we've said so far, and then we're going to really go in for the kill. Okay, so let's just go step by step, because I want to make sure we're on the same page. So this, in our analysis of the Alabama ruling that, you know, compared the IVF clinic to a daycare center and said that an embryo is like a human being, and killing it is like killing a person, and you can have a wrongful death lawsuit for destroying an embryo. So we saw that the Mishnah in Olos, that the Torah says that abortion can be allowed when it's to save the mother's life, but only until the baby, the fetus, when the fetus becomes a baby, at the point when it's the majority of it has been born. Once the majority of the fetus has been born, it's now a life, it's now a nefesh, as we saw, and therefore it has the status of a human, only once it's born. But then we said, but does that mean that the fetus has no status? It's just, it goes from absolutely nothing to then being a human being from the moment it's born? So we said, well, maybe we have, the way to analyze this in the Torah is to see, are we allowed to violate Shabbat and Yom Tov, Yom Kippur, in order to save, just to save a fetus? We saw that the rabbi said, well, when would that ever come up? How would you ever have a fetus separate, you know, an embryo separate from a mother, separate from an adult, from a human? And now we see that that can happen. And the rabbi said, even though it was a debate, but the majority said, no, you can violate Shabbat and Yom Tov, which seems to give it status. If you can violate Shabbat and Yom Kippur to save the life of an embryo, it seems to be that it does have status. And maybe, you know, we do have responsibilities towards the embryo, and it has certain rights because we can violate Shabbos for it. Then we said that the reason, though, was because not because of the chai behem, because you should save a life, but because of its potential to in the future observe Torah mitzvah. So, but it's still it's a potential life. So potential life is that's still important. So at this point, now I want to bring up. I want to really go in for the analysis, and this happened, the way it happened in the Jewish community was a different story, a different case than the Alabama case. The Alabama case, we're still not even sure exactly how it happened, that someone got in there and took the frozen embryos out of the, and dropped them, and they died or destroyed them. The case that happened in the Jewish community was as follows. In Bnei Brak, maybe it was in Tel Aviv, but in Israel, there was a fertility clinic. And it has all these, you know, fertilized embryos in their frozen in their clinic. And a horrible thing happened. It wasn't that someone came in and tampered or broke them, but there was a power outage. Power outage in a fertility clinic, not good. Okay, no problem. There's backup generators, of course, right? However, someone has to turn on the backup generator. And the power outage happened on Shabbos. It was Shabbat. Can you violate Shabbat to turn on the power, the backup power, the generator? And it's an engine. It's a combustion engine, right? These generators. There's going to be fire burning. It's a violation of Shabbos to turn on the generator. Now, they went to Rav Vosner. Rav Vosner was the leading Hasidic posek rabbinic authority in Bnei Brak, one of the greatest rabbinic figures in the world. He just died a few years ago, but he was the rabbinic authority. And he knew. He realized, now think about it, that what he answers, it's like the Supreme Court. Just like the Alabama Supreme Court, in their attempt, whatever you're going to say their motivations were, and I'm going to leave that out for now, but in their attempt to give the embryos the status of a human, they now have forbidden IVF. Their ramifications were that IVF is gone in Alabama, right? Because everyone's afraid of liability. If these things that they're dealing with are human life. So, and I they knew that. I don't think that they were shocked to find out that all the fertility clinics in Alabama shut down the next day. I think that they knew that this would be a ramification. So Rabbi Rosner realized, wait a second, they're now asking me if they can violate Shabbos with a Torah prohibition to save embryos. If I say yes, what does that mean for practice of fertility clinics in the Orthodox community? I mean, if I say you can break Shabbos, I'm saying that these embryos have the status of a human. And therefore, all this IVF treatment, PGD, which PGD, by the way, necessitates destruction of the embryo. Because the whole point of PGD, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, is that you fertilize a number of eggs and you have these pre-embryos. Then you check them to see which ones have the genetic mutation that you're trying to filter out. And then you only implant, impregnate with the ones that are not diseased or do not have that concern. So the other ones that have, you know, whatever it is, Tay-Sachs or whatever it is you're trying to avoid, you're not going to implant that in somebody. You're not going to get someone pregnant intentionally knowing that you're going to have Tay-Sachs or whatever the illness is that you're worried about. They're going to be destroyed or researched on or whatever it is. But so now Rabbi Wozner realizes, okay, wait a second. They came to me right now on Shabbos urgently. Rabbi, what do we do? The embryos, they're all going to thaw out and be destroyed. Can we break Shabbos to save them? And if I say, yes, break Shabbos and save them, I just put the stop on fertility treatment in our community. So that was his dilemma. That's the problem. So now that you understand all of that background, now you can appreciate what he did with this and a few rulings, which I think are brilliant. And I think without that background, you might be confused and a little bit maybe even troubled by his response. But let me show you what he said. Because the truth is, I would have said right now, with what we've seen so far, of the sources we've seen, which is really pretty much, I gave you the sources, right? I gave you the sugya, I gave you the background. You would say, well, the Ramban, quoting the Bahag, who became the mainstream approach, says that you do violate Shabbos to save an embryo. We just saw it. And the reason was because it will observe more Shabbos in the future. So it seems that he's going to say, yes, break Shabbos, save the embryos, and yeah, I guess now we can't, unless I can come up with some kind of crazy gymnastics and put myself in a pretzel to figure out how, and now we can't do PGD and other kinds of fertility treatments. Because that's what we've seen so far. But he was thinking this through carefully. And here's where he goes with it. So here's Rev Vosner Shevet Alevi's answer. Vosner Shevet Alevi Chelik Hey Simon Mem Zayin. So he says, now we're talking here not just about a fetus. We're talking about the Inyan Tinok Hamivchana. You know, an IVF embryo. So he says, well, what's the suffix? Hasuffik bezeim. Gamba kai gavna, should it be, now we already said that a fetus, you know, an embryo that's in the womb, right, that's growing and gestating, that we do violate the Sabbath to save its life. Yes. But the suffix here is im gamba kai gavna, even outside of the womb, in the test tube, when you were in the lab, in the clinic. Even in this case, in that case, Amar Bahag to Mechalalin al Ha'ubarin. Would the Bahag have said, even in this case, you violate Shabbos? It is a potential life in a certain way, but is that different because it's outside of the womb? And he says, "Ukesvarato degam lifnei mem yom." And he even held that before 40 days, because there's, by the way, another side point, is that the rabbi said, and this is also relevant for the abortion conversation sometimes, though we're not going there right now, but before 40 days of gestation, the rabbi said that the fetus is what they called maya ba'alma. It's just water. It doesn't even have the status of a fetus before the first 40 days. So that's also relevant for this conversation, but it's all whole debate. You know, how about if it's frozen in the lab for months or years? We usually say it still has the status of the point at which it was frozen. But anyways, he says, according to the Bahag, Svarto de gam lifnei mem yom af al pi de ke maya ba'alma nechasha mikol makom mechalin. It doesn't matter, because the Bahag said, even before 40 days, you would violate Shabbos to save the embryo. That's before 40 days. So it does. So we can't go, it's not relevant for us. Even some might have said, well, it's before 40 days, so therefore it's different status. No, the Bahag says you violate Shabbos and Yom Kippur even for an embryo before 40 days. So that's not going to help us. But there's something else that's going to help us. And actually, before we do, just look down to the bottom of the page now, I just want to show you, I think we should look at this first so you just understand where he's coming from. The Talmud says, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Nun Zayin Amud Beis, 57b. It says something interesting. It says, Ben Noach, Nerag Bedayin Echad, Be'ed Echad, Shelo Basra, Mi Pi Ish, Velo Mi Pi Isha, Mi Filo Karov. Okay, there's a lot of differences between Ben Noach and Yisrael. Mishum Rabbi Yishmo Amru, Afalu Barim. The Bnei Noach, before the giving of the Torah, there was a prohibition against abortion. We've already seen there's many, many times when abortion is allowed, maybe even required, but there was this initial prohibition against abortion. But what did that mean? Where did they get that from so early in the Torah? So it says, my time under Rabbi Yishmael, where did you ever find a prohibition against abortion in early in the Torah, in Bereishis? Because it says as follows. Now, this is an interesting play on words. The Torah here we're about to read now, is where the Torah allows capital punishment. That's a whole separate discussion because the rabbis severely limited when capital punishment can actually, in practice, be utilized. But the Torah says capital punishment is allowed. Where does it say that? It says it here. Shafach dam ha'adam ba'adam demoy shafech. So that means, shafach dam ha'adam, whoever sheds the blood of a person, ba'adam demoy shafech. Another person has the right to end their life, meaning capital punishment. But no, the rabbi said, wait a second, what's this, it's such a funny phrase, and it rhymes, and it's so interesting, what does it mean? So they said, no, what does it mean, shofach dam ha'adam, put the comma someplace else, ha'adam ba'adam, someone who sheds the blood of a person, but who's in a person. So they said, what does it mean, ezehu adam shehu ba'adam, what's a person in a person? Have Omar zuubar shebeme imo. That is a fetus in an embryo in its mother's womb. It's a prohibition against killing a fetus in the mother's womb. Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam. You cannot kill a fetus in the womb. That's what the Gemara there was talking about. Okay, so now let's go. That's what it said. So now let's read Rev Vosner again. So it says, Ledati. Barur degam lebahag, even to the Bahag, asur lechalal Shabbos bezeh. Whoa, wait a second. He says now you would not be allowed to violate Shabbos in this case. I thought we just said you can violate Shabbos for an embryo. But in this case, outside of the womb, you can't violate Shabbos? Why not? He says, Dal korchach lo hitir bahag lechalal Shabbos al ubarim, afil ifnei mem yom, afal gav demay ba'amahu, ele be'ubar toch me ha'aim. He only allowed it when it's in its mother's womb. Because we just said the prohibition against abortion there was a person in a person, the fetus in the mother's womb. But apparently, abortion would not be prohibited, according to the Torah, outside the mother's womb. Now, could you ever have had such a case of a fetus, of an embryo, outside of a womb? Well, maybe not then, but now you do. So Rav Ozer is saying, look, this is now relevant. The Bahag would not have allowed to kill an embryo, to violate Shabbos for an embryo if it was not in the womb. Because clearly there's not the reason of saving life to violate Shabbos v'chai behem. Mikol makom had the paskinan alav shemutar l'chalo Shabbos gam ze nivna al yosod shiye al kapanim achar kach b'nei kayama. You can only violate Shabbos because it's going to be alive and then it's going to observe many Shabboses. Al yudei sherov vlados b'nei kayama meim. Because most of these embryos end up living because they're in a state right now where they're going to live. Right, they're in the womb and. Yes, sometimes there's spontaneous miscarriages and things like that, but most of the time they live. So therefore, you can violate Shabbos because you can assume that most likely this fetus this is going to be born and become a human. Masha ein kein zera zeh, but not true in this case. Shebetocha mivchana, that it's now in a test tube or in a lab. It's not currently right now in a place where it can become a viable human being. Not without all kinds of interventions being done on it. She'enu nechlal klal berov zeh, derov ubarim b'nei kayamim heim. It's not right now going to be alive. Yes, it could possibly live, but it's not in a state now where it will live. Debochanim rak mibachutz, eich yeh pachut hadavarim. We look at how it's going to be right now. And right now, it's not in a state where it can live. Mash'en keim b'nidon didan de'adayin afilu eno begeder t'chilas ubar. It's not even considered what would have the status of the beginning of a fetus. It's not even that. It's totally outside of the womb. And what's brilliant about this, though, so now you might say, oh, shoot. So we're stuck, though, because, okay, great. I see, Rav Vosner, you now have saved us from and enabled us to engage in artificial IVF and artificial insemination and PGD and all these things we talked about, because now you said that it doesn't have a status of a life. You can't violate Shabbos for it. So therefore, since you can't violate Shabbos for it, it doesn't have a status of a human, and therefore, you can engage in fertility treatments. But what a shame. Meaning you're going to now let all those embryos thaw out? Like, they're going to go to waste? Is there no way to thread the needle here? So he doesn't go further with it. But in the Nishmas Avraham, the classic great sefer on medical halacha, he quotes in Evan Ezer Siman Aleph what he asked Rav Neuwirth, the author of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchas, about this. Rav Neuwirth just gives him a pithy statement, but I'm going to explain it. Rav Neuwirth says, I asked him, can you violate Shabbos to save an embryo? So he says, Shemati shegam isuri derabanan asur lasos kedei lahatzil betziot eila. No, you cannot violate Torah prohibitions, like turning on the generator. You can't even violate rabbinic prohibitions because it has no status of a human, and therefore you cannot violate a rabbinic prohibition. Ach l'shelati anali moiva rabbi shlita shamir l'nachriye mutter. But you could ask someone who's not Jewish to turn it on kedei lahatzil habetziot afilu isurei Torah. You could ask a non-Jew. Now, what is going on here? And here's why I think it's brilliant. He doesn't give his reasoning, but here's what I think it is. What has the status where you cannot violate a Torah prohibition to do it? You cannot even violate a rabbinic prohibition on Shabbos to do it, but you can ask someone who's not Jewish. They can do it. They're not forbidden from observing Shabbos. You can ask them to do it. That is, there's a status of what's called chole she'ein bo sakana. In halacha, there's different categories, right? Someone who's in deathly ill, who's in danger, you can do anything for them, right? Obviously, we violate, do whatever you can, save their life. Whatever the prohibition is, you save their life. But what about someone who's a chole she'ein bo sakana? Someone who's ill with a serious illness, you know, it's a systemic illness, something that they have to be bedridden for, something that they can't function properly, but they're not in danger. Life's not in danger. So the rabbis say, if it's a big need, you can do more. But in general, we say you cannot violate Shabbos for them. But someone who's not Jewish can. They can do something to help them out. They are allowed to. So it seems to be that what he's doing is saying, let's utilize that category. No, I know these embryos, these frozen embryos, are not sick. They're not sick people. They're not sick adults. They're not cholim she'ena hem Shem Hamsakana. They're not people that are in danger. But we could use that category, that halachic category, and say they fit into that category, and then say we have such a category where we say there's someone for whom you cannot violate Shabbos for, but you can ask someone else to help out who's not Jewish and therefore not obligated in the laws of Shabbat. And therefore we could say for the fertility clinic, now we've thread the needle. We say the fertility clinic, you cannot turn on the generator. No, these frozen embryos do not have the status of a human. We disagree with the Alabama Supreme Court, and therefore you are allowed to engage in fertility treatments, PGD, and everything. But do we want to let it go to waste? No, we can allow someone who's not Jewish to turn on the generator and say, save them. If they couldn't save them, they couldn't save them. But he wants them to be able to save them. Now, this leads to one more point. And then I also want to open it up for discussion. But let me show you one more point, maybe two more points to conclude. Because there is still one other issue. Because there is a slight difference. There's a lot of differences probably. But there's a difference between our case of can you violate the Sabbath? Well, I mean, the whole thing's different because in Alabama, no one would have cared about can you violate the Sabbath. I mean, it would have been a different, totally different. It's a totally different, but we're trying to get the principles. But I mean, the rabbi deciding, can I override the laws of Shabbat to save the life of an embryo? And he said, no, you cannot override the laws of Shabbat to save its life, and therefore it doesn't have status. Versus in Alabama, where they said, what now happens to the person who destroyed the embryo, right? There's a little difference. You can see that, right? The person destroyed it. Is it a capital offense? Is that as if they murdered a human being? Which Alabama said, yes, they killed a person. So you see, it's a little bit different. But the rabbis deal with this as well because they had to. Because if we say that PGD is allowed, and I already, and also oftentimes in IVF, you do have to, in the process, there are going to be fertilized embryos that are going to be destroyed. So is that allowed by the Torah? Because it's one thing to say you can't violate Shabbos for it, but can you destroy it? Can you destroy the embryo? And this is also debated amongst the rabbis. There were some who said no. And in Bnei Brak, there was the Kilas Yaakov, the Stipler, who said, you know, you cannot, we're concerned about this because of the status of the some, it does have some status, we saw, right? That there's some status for the embryo, and therefore you cannot destroy it. And actually, it's fascinating. I'll just show you Rav Zilberstein, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, the son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv, major posek in Bnei Brak today and throughout the world, in his Sefer Shi'urei Torah L'Rofim, his Torah lectures for doctors, Chelik Dalad, Simon Reish Nun Zayin. He deals with this question as a side point. First, I just want to show you something that he says that I thought was very beautiful, because he says something in the course of this tshuva that I thought was so, so powerful. Where is this? I want to show you. Yeah. So kasher yavo zug l'shol das Torah, when a couple comes to ask me, ha'im heim chayavim lishtadel l'havi l'olam yaladim l'biterech hanal, do they have to go through, you know, for artificial fertility to have children? They ask me, I say to them, lo zos darsha Torah. No, it's not required. You're not required to do this. And he says, you know, you can adopt, and he gives all these other options. But then he says, you know, even though I told them, and because many of the rabbis in my community said not to engage in fertility clinics, he says I tell couples when they come to me that you don't have to go through fertility treatment. You know, there's halachic issues with that. But then he says, ulam im ikar kavanasam hi lasbia es haratzon hativi shelahem. But you know what? They really have a desire to have children, and they're really sincere. He says, ulazakos liros pribitnam, and they want to, you know, have children and raise children. Kasha limnoa mehemzos. He says, I just thought he shows a sensitivity. He says, it's hard to prohibit this from them. I have a hard time saying, no, you're not allowed. But then he says, okay, fine. But what about this issue? What about this issue of destroying the embryos? Could that be allowed? So he says, haheter hadachuk lishtamish b'technikot hachadashot. The difficult permission that some give. Who rak b'tanai kafel mekufal. There's two stringencies you have to follow. Two things, two two things you have to do to limit, you know, when we can allow this. He says, number one, he says, Shiakpidu lo lachlif zera habal bezera acher. You have to be very careful. That's why many rabbis required that you have to have some kind of supervision or ways of ensuring that it's not going to get mixed up and you're going to have you're going to have your children and it's not going to mix up someone else's in the lab. Okay, that's number one. Number two, kamokain bafriat Mivchana chayavim gam lizayir miod lo the arbev beitziot, and you can't mix the sperm. You also can't mix up the eggs. Yesh b'ze chashash mamzerus k'mivor b'mokmacher. This could be all kinds of concerns about yichus and mamzerus and the what happened to the family. And then he says as follows: V'yesh yitziayetz im chachme Yisrael ketsa levetzazot. You have to get guidance from a great rabbi how to do this. And just be careful about it. Anyways, it then says, Osana beitziot hapigiot lemachalot. What are you going to do now with those embryos, those fertilized embryos that are diseased, that have genetic mutations that you don't want to use? So can you destroy them? Because this is now the big question. This now gets really to the Alabama case. Can you destroy them? He says, first of all, mutter lo lashtilan. Of course, you don't have to impregnate with them. You don't have to use them to become pregnant with. Umutar aflash midan. And Rav Zilberstein says you can even destroy them. Ve'ein b'kach iser. There's no prohibition against destroying them. The embryo can be destroyed by the Torah law. Ve'ein lebitziot mufarot elu. And these fertilized eggs have no hanimsot mi'chutz lerechem din nefesh. Once they are outside of the womb, they do not have the status of a human. And the one who destroys them is not considered to have killed them. So this is a direct response to Alabama. I mean, this is direct to Alabama, right? I'm not sure that anyone in the Supreme Court of Alabama cares what he says, but he is on the Supreme Court of the Jews, right? I mean, he's a very big rabbi, and he is a dissenting opinion. Ki ha-Torah asra lishpoch dam adam ha-nimsa ba-dam. This is the source that we saw, Rabbi Yishmael. The Torah says you cannot kill Adam be'Adam, a person in a person. But Kmo Shadarshu Chazal B'Sechas Sanhedrin, Al Pasach Shofech Dam Adam Ba'Adam Demoy Shafeich Shakavana L'Chaye Ubar Nimsoim Ba'Adam. That's talking about a person in a person, the fetus in the womb. Klomar Berechem Aim Aval Lo Biyoso Adayin B'Mivchana, but not when the embryo is outside of the womb and in the clinic, in the lab, in the test tube, so to speak, as they call it. And therefore, that's why there's no permission to violate the Sabbath in order to save these embryos, because then it would have that status. Because it doesn't have that status, therefore you can violate Shabbos. Ki einam begeder nefesh. They do not have the status of a human, of a person. Umutar lechalo Shabbos latzol nafsho shel mi shekvar nolad. Of course, you can violate Shabbos to save the life of someone who's been born, but not for a thing that has not yet been born. So therefore, Rav Zilberstein concludes that that you can destroy them. So therefore you can engage in this. And we thus see from this full analysis that the embryo, even though an embryo does have some status, because it will one day be born. It's not a nefesh, but it will one day be born, so you can violate Shabbos for it, not when it's outside of the womb. If it's outside the womb, it does not have that status. And I think it's obvious, it goes without saying, but just to mention briefly, the Alabama Supreme Court even said that a fetus is in the image of God, which is, I find fascinating, because from a Jewish perspective, the image of God, I mean, there's a lot of opinions about what it means, but like the Meshech Chachma says, for example, the Meshech Chachma says in Bereishis, Hatzelem Eloki hu ha-bechira ha-chafshis bli teva machriach. Tzelem Eloki means free will, the ability to understand things and make decisions. That's what free will is. The Sforno says a very, very similar thing, that, to be different than angels, that we actually have free will. Or, the Rav Eliyahu Dessler has a famous piece where he talks about how, it's ability to give and to take and to be involved in moral life is part of what it means to be in the image of God. Or Rav Soloveitchik, based on Ramban, that being in the image of God is the ability to create, to create new things and come up with new things, the creative capacity. Anyways, clearly all these are not something that an embryo has the capability of whatsoever. So it's curious even how they define image of God. But Because if you go with that definition that life is based on the image of God, yeah, a baby also might not have the image of God, but we don't say that. I'm just pointing out that they went very far to say that not only is it status of a life, it's a human, it's just like a daycare center, it's just like a child, and it's in the image of God. I just thought that was quite a statement that the Alabama Supreme Court made, and I think now you can see why. It seems that Torah approach to halacha, Jewish values, take a different approach and do not agree with the Alabama Supreme Court. I'm curious. I'm happy to take any questions or comments that you might have. I'd love to hear your reaction.
My question is, if we go with the premise that the embryos are potential life, and we also know that those who are storing embryos may be doing so with some that are the spares, they don't intend to impregnate, or there's a divorce or a separation and now they don't want them. What does it change the, in your words, the status of the embryos that are extras or that aren't wanted anymore by those who originally put them in there? Or
right.
What is the practicality of the theory?
None of them, even those who there's a plan next week, you have the surrogate or whatever it is, and they're going to be impregnated with that embryo. They, as long as they're outside the body, they're not adam ba adam, they don't have that status. And the rabbis, the truth is, the rabbis, most of the poskim today say, not only are you allowed to destroy them, but it might even be best to destroy them because there's a concern about them being born and you don't know who the parent, someone else then has that child and you don't know who the parents are. And there's all these concerns about who are the parents. And, the rabbis even encourage destroying them or using them for research, but not to get impregnated by anybody. Dr. Trabati.
Thank you so much, Jason, for a really fascinating review. This is really great. My view is of any value placed on embryos and whether there is any tort or monetary question. What if technology develops where we could have artificial uteruses that can carry a pregnancy to a significant degree all the way to
the end? That's a fascinating question.
What does that mean?
I think you're saying two things, right? Because the first thing you said by research, you're talking about like embryonic stem cell research?
Just research in general.
If
embryos have no status.
Right.
And they're just property.
Right. And it's happening here, right? This is all happening here in our hospital, right? There's definitely lots of research happening on embryos. So, you ask interesting questions because, first of all, just by the way, modern technology impacts all these questions because when we started out by talking about that Mishnah in Olos when it said that only the fetus only has a status once it's Yatzah Rosha Meruba, once the majority of it comes out. So, there's some times, and we've had presentations here about this, where there are fetal surgeries, right, where they have to open up, kind of do a surgery on the fetus and then put it back into the womb and let it gestate. So has it now been born? Like, wait a second. It did leave. Like, it left and it came back. But did it gain the status? And then did it lose the status when it goes back in? Like, this is a big question. In general, when it came to the question of embryonic stem cell research, this was a big issue, as I'm sure you know. And the rabbis opined on this. A lot of rabbis, I know that the RCA and the OU and a lot of rabbinic organizations came out in favor of embryonic stem cell research. And, their argument was like, keep in mind, this is before 40 days. This is, the prohibition against abortion only applies when it's inside the womb. There were those who said that abortion is about, damaging to the mother, damaging to the fetus, is not damage happening. And for the sake of saving life, if it's to save life and it has a positive benefit for humanity, we're not necessarily making the embryos just for the sake of research, but they're being produced in the context of fertility treatment. And there's a lot of leftovers right now, something like 1 million in America in fertility in banks. So in those cases when it's already been made and it's outside the womb and it's to save life. So the rabbis did feel that this is. something that could be allowed. This is another difference. The truth is, embryonic stem cell research is a difference between the Catholic Church and the rabbinic community, because as much as the Catholic Church was opposed to embryonic stem cell research, the rabbis supported it, with, you know, with some minor limitation. So your question about the 40 days, when its developmental stage is still under 40 days, because it's been frozen, and it not only frozen like cold, but frozen in its development to now be utilized in other ways, so that it remains under 40 days. But since it's outside of the womb, it's the status is different anyways, and for the sake of saving lives. And to your previous question, you know, yes, of course, we do have to treat the embryos and the fetus with definite reverence and sanctity and be careful about it. And to your previous question about the criminal liability for damages, I mean, that's what the Torah talks about in Mishpatim. There is, you know, monetary damages that can be imposed upon someone for damaging a fetus. So obviously we do want to treat it with utmost respect and care. The question just is, does it have the same status as a human? And that's the point that we're making, that it does not.